Over the next 2 days, we're going to take a look at how states protect children who've been separated, or in many cases, taken away from their parents. We start today in New Jersey. The state's child protection system is under fire after a series of high-profile abuse cases. Last January, a boy was found dead and his two brothers locked up, apparently malnourished, in the basement of their home in Newark. In October, four boys adopted through the state's foster care system were found nearly starved to death. They were so stunted by malnutrition that a 19-year-old weighed just 45 pounds. Efforts to reform New Jersey's child protection system are now underway, but as Nancy Solomon reports, little progress has been made so far.
Scan the dozens of news stories about the crisis in New Jersey's foster care system over the last year, and you won't find anything about Brian Baxter. He's just heartbreakingly average. Baxter has been in the system since he was seven. His mother was addicted to drugs. His stepmother beat him. While he was shifted around to different homes, he was molested by older boys. Then at 15, Baxter sexually assaulted a seven-year-old girl.
I had so much anger in me. This is how my whole life turned out, period. I mean, I was just like, hey, it's normal. This is what's happening to me. So I was going, just doing everything back to everybody else, too.
Now Baxter is 19 and living in a shelter for homeless teenagers. He's a big fellow with a sweet smile who bristles at having to live in yet another group home where he has no privacy and little choice about what he can do in his living space. But Baxter has no high school diploma, no job skills. All he has to his name is a criminal record as a sex offender and shame.
If I could have got taken from my home and put into a better home at that time when they knew I wasn't like doing good in school. But I don't think too many people care, though. I mean, as long as it's not they kids going through it, then.
They could have rescued him from the time that he was seven and it first started.
Roy Lightstein is Brian Baxter's social worker at the shelter, where he has a thick file that tracks his path through the State Division of Youth and Family Services, known here as DYFUS.
I'll be the first person to tell you that Brian made mistakes. I'll also be the first person to tell you that he's had more DYFUS workers than I have fingers and toes. His case has been switched on him so many times, he doesn't know who's going to help him.
Baxter's story is sadly typical for an agency that has been flooded with problems and given few resources to solve them. First, the state cut programs like drug treatment and child care for the poor. In the last 10 years, the number of children under New Jersey supervision rose by 31% to 58,000 children. During that time, the DYFUS budget rose only slightly, and that means spending per child was drastically reduced. Hetty Rosenstein, president of the union that represents DYFUS caseworkers, says eventually all of society's problems land on the doorstep of child protection.
Nobody wanted to pay to have enough staff to really do this job. There are not very many places on this earth where child protective services workers are walking around with 100 children on their caseloads. And that is going on in New Jersey.
The Child Welfare League of America recommends a caseload of 17. Yet successive governors cut the DYFUS budget and laid off caseworkers. Frustration with the working conditions has led to huge turnover.
It gets very confusing because you have so much to do. It's like a job that will drive you out of your mind.
Reggie Jones has been a DYFUS caseworker for 19 years.
When you get to the office, sit at your desk, there's 1,000 things to do, but you want to see what I got to do first. And then the phone rings, and then somebody telling you, you know, the mother didn't come home last night, so the kids was left alone. You got a placement to do. You got to close cases because you got too many cases, and your supervisor's telling you that you got to close cases. I can go on and on and on.
The pressure on caseworkers is made worse by a shortage of foster families. The decision to pull an endangered child from home can mean a frantic search for a foster placement that can extend late into the night while a traumatized child sits in the office with a plastic bag full of belongings. On average, New Jersey foster kids move more and wait longer for a permanent home than in most states. 10-year-old Sarah Landy and her brother John, age 13, were taken away from their homeless, drug-using parents when they were 4 and 7.
It was kind of scary being a foster kid because you didn't really have parents. You just had temporary parents, and that was kind of difficult because you started to like those people, then when you left, you never really saw them anymore.
Sarah Landy is outgoing, pleasantly plump, and already taller than her older brother, a shyer, more reserved kid. The pair spent 3 years moving between foster homes. They were removed from one house after a teacher noticed a big dent in Landy's forehead. She had been hit with a shoe by a foster mother. Life is looking a lot better now that they've been adopted by a couple who live in a chic 19th century house in a North Jersey suburb.
There's some creme fraiche in the
refrigerator. Whether it's making sandwich wraps on the large butcher block in the center of the kitchen.
John, do we want to peel cucumber or not peel?
You're the peel.
Or driving around in the family Saab, or visiting a theme park with their new grandparents. Life couldn't be more different.
Why are there two boxes of fudge? Who got carried away buying fudge?
Their new mom, Merle Landy, had to go through the same process as foster parents in order to adopt kids. She says the training was abysmal and the bureaucracy tangled and thick.
Nobody seemed to know what was due at the beginning. I mean, they must be doing adoptions regularly, but there wasn't like a list of this is the paperwork and this is what needs to be gotten in. Every time everything was in, there was something else.
By all accounts, the scandals in the past year threw the agency into free fall. New Jersey settled a lawsuit against DIFAS by agreeing to widespread reforms monitored by an outside panel. Responsibility for reform fell into the lap of the well-respected Human Services Commissioner, Gwendolyn Harris, who began a long career in social services as a DIFAS caseworker. She returned after 20 years to find the agency in chaos, with workers using the same ancient computers.
There's also a culture that has a different standard for some of our children in the child welfare system, and as a result allows or accepts certain circumstances, certain levels of risks to exist.
Two advocacy groups involved in the reforms say they are disappointed in how little has been achieved so far. Now, both Harris and her deputy have announced they're leaving. The governor created a child advocate who can sue the state if it doesn't improve the system. Kevin Ryan says he'll be aggressive in forcing the state to protect children, but it will require public support.
This is a social sin. We don't think enough about the needs of children who are in foster care, and it's key that people get fed up and frustrated and demand a different result from public systems.
For now, the steady stream of shocking news stories about foster kids has kept up pressure for reform. But the changes are expected to take years to put in place, and that's time that foster kids can't afford. For NPR News, I'm Nancy Solomon.